thank you, Valerie. Thank you one more time. And I'd like to thank especially also Dennis for his comments this morning, his instruction, his direction, and for the words that Will brought us this morning, because it leads to something that I would really like to talk about today. Shelley read us a text this morning that leads right into a thought that I'm sure we all have shared recently. You know, these are special times, times that we have not experienced previously, none of us at least. These are times that, as they say, try men's souls, times that present conditions that we have never endured. In our community here in Roseburg and around even our state, even across our nation and around the world, for the last several weeks, for actually several months now, and you can say that this condition goes back probably, what, 6 months about? Many people have been suffering, some with devastating illnesses, some even with loss of life, some experiencing the sorrow associated with the loss of a loved one. Others are shut away in their homes, prevented even from congregating in a house of worship. We know how that feels, don't we? Deprived of services that might even be essential, unable to access their places of employment or earn their living. And many of us are thinking, wow, I've had about enough of this. You know, it's getting old. I'm really tired of this whole thing. I can't get the things done that I need to get done. I can't get around to the places I need to get to. I might even be under the weather, or I might be dealing with people who are incapacitated. We're getting a little bit tired of the whole situation. At least some of us are. And I've heard this on all sides. In fact, I think some of us have said, I'm getting a little bit impatient with this whole thing. And the thought is, how long do we have to wait? I've heard that many times. Here I am. I'm staying home. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm obeying all the rules. And as I'm obeying all the rules, I'm not getting anything done. I've felt that way myself, and I have to admit, being patient is not one of my strong points. And so I kind of have this feeling. I have places to go, people to see, things to get done, and these things are not happening. When can I count, some people are saying, when can I count on getting back to work? Well, I heard somebody the other day say, this is really the worst part of the whole thing. I can't watch my favorite Major League Baseball team on TV. Now that really brings it home, and I'm telling you that is a burden that many people are having difficulty with today. When are we going to get this thing fixed? That's what I'm hearing. And I've heard also the question, couldn't maybe this whole thing have been avoided in the first place if somebody had done their job right? If somebody had done what they were supposed to do at the right time, in the right place, could not this whole situation have been avoided? And especially important is, who can we find to blame this on? There must be somebody at fault, and we should be able to blame this whole situation on them if we could just pin it down. Shift that back and forth, this side, that side. Pretty soon we'll nail it down, I'm sure. Question remains, and I'm sorry about the voice. It's given me problems, and I'm really praying. We prayed last night, we prayed this morning, that the voice would hold out, and I think it might make it till 12 o'clock. I've only got 31 minutes to go. Why do we have to wait so long? So long. You know, this is actually getting a little bit frustrating. Frustrating. It gets to you after a while. You can get upset. Some of us might even say, I'm really actually getting a little bit irritated, maddening. I am really getting tired of this whole situation. I just want it to be done. I want it to be done now, and I want to get back to normal life. I am tired of this. I'm getting, impatient. Impatient, that's my word. And for some reason, that word kind of comes home to me because I have a tendency to become impatient. And I struggle with that mostly all the time. But impatience, you know, someone really recently said to me, for a Christian, for a dedicated follower of God, impatience, George, is really the absence of faith. I thought about that. I'm still thinking about it. And I thought, wow, if I had real faith, adequate faith, complete faith, I shouldn't really become impatient, should I? I should have confidence in where things are going and how things are going to be done and that the Lord has it under control. And I thought, well, maybe there's some truth to that. But at the same time, I know that experience has shown that impatience appears even in the most faithful of God's dedicated and humble servants. It even happens. It crops up. And I got to thinking about that. And an illustration from the Bible came to mind. And I thought I might review that with you a little bit this morning. Actually, there was a situation. I think all of you and I, we're all acquainted with this story. And it shows up in the book of Numbers, especially. It shows up, you know, it's referred to elsewhere. But in the book of Numbers, you get to the 20th chapter. And there's a situation here that is absolutely just mind-boggling. Here's the background a little bit. Excuse me for the voice. Moses, man of God, humble, enduring, faithful, dedicated man of God, is leading the Israelite people from Egypt through the desert toward the promised land. That's the situation. Now, they left Egypt. You know, they migrated down there to the area by Mount Sinai. Took them about 3 months or something to get there. And then they spent nearly a year camped there at the base of the mountain. After they, I think it was around 11 months, after they left Sinai, then they migrated out into the desert. They camped in a region called Rephidim at a place called Kadesh. And this is the place at Kadesh where a situation developed that became a turning point in Moses' life and his complete experience in his relationship with everyone in the world and with the Lord. This is a place where Moses became impatient. But as we look at the situation, we might think, wow, with a little background in view, we might think, if anybody ever had reason, justification to become impatient, this is the time, this is the place, this is the guy who had every justification to become impatient. Well, here's what happened at Kadesh. You know, the people had come to this particular place at a particular moment, and I would like to just read with you. I don't know if you want to take your Bible or you want to just listen to me, but I'm going to read from the beginning of chapter 20 in the book of Numbers. This is Numbers chapter 20, and I'm starting right at verse 1. I'm going to read most of the first part of the chapter here. Then the children of Israel, the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed at Kadesh. Now there was no water for the congregation. So they gathered together against Moses, against Moses and Aaron, and the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up this assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It's not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." Down to verse 7. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. You see what the situation is here. You talk about a contentious, an obstinate, rebellious, thankless group of people facing Moses and loading it all on him, as though Moses had the idea to bring them out into the desert. Moses never asked for this assignment. You remember that story. Moses tried everything he could think of to wiggle out of it, but the Lord gave it to him anyway, and here he is. So I'm going to read here verse 7 and 8. And the Lord spoke to Moses and told him, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, and go and gather the congregation together and speak to the rock." And then in verse 8, so God told Moses to stand before the congregation. Now here's this huge, several hundred thousand people. That's the congregation we're talking about. Several hundred thousand people. And the Lord tells Moses, gather them all together where they can see what's going to happen. Get them right there, stand before them, and speak to the rock right before their eyes, and that rock will yield its water. And you shall bring forth the water for them out of the rock and be able to give drink to all the people and to their livestock as well. Now think about that. Several hundred thousand people with all their livestock. Dear people, that has got to be an enormous river of water coming out of the stone of that mountain. But that's what the Lord said to Moses. And you know where that story led. But I want to fill in here behind that with a little bit of background. You know, you remember Moses struck the rock, and the Lord said, ultimately, Moses, you're not going to be able to go into the promised land. Moses must have been impatient. But what led up to that moment of impatience? I'm going to just drop back a few chapters in the book of Numbers and think of a few experiences here that led up to this. And I'm thinking of something that comes to light in chapter 11. Excuse me. In chapter 11, here's this account where the mixed multitude, but also a large number of the children of Israel, the descendants of Jacob, right there in the congregation, faced Moses and start accusing him and said, "Moses, who is going to give us good meat to eat? We remember the delicious fish that we ate so freely in Egypt." Ah, when we were in Egypt, it was great. We ate freely in Egypt with cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic. And now our whole being is dried up and there's nothing at all except this manna. Every day, manna, everything the same. Every day it's just nothing but manna, the same thing over and over. Well, you know how this came to be. Sometime before that, the people had said, "Moses, it's your fault, Moses." They seemed to forget it was the Lord who brought them out of Egypt, wasn't it? "Moses, you brought us out here. Now we're starving to death. We don't have enough food. What are you going to do?" And Moses went to the Lord, said, "What am I going to do with this people? There's 600,000 men and the other people with them. How am I going to feed these people?" And Moses pled with the Lord and he said, "Lord, let me die rather than endure the the insults and assaults and living with these complaining people. Just let me die and take it off my back. Why did you do this to me? And he says that. And the Lord says, don't worry, Moses, we'll take care of it. He says, we're going to give them manna. Didn't call it manna, but he said, we'll provide them food. And sure enough, you know, every morning the manna was there at least 6 days a week. And on Friday there was enough to carry over for the Sabbath so they didn't have to pick up anything on the Sabbath. Everybody had plenty to eat. Everybody had enough. There was never too much. It was just right. The people were fed. But here they are again saying, Moses, we are fed up with this. We can't stand it any longer. And they're on the verge of rebellion. It's an actual revolt. And Moses has to put up with these folks. And if you read the account, it sounds like the Lord was just about ready to write them off. And Moses stands up for the people and speaks to the Lord on their behalf. About this time, wouldn't one of us start to feel a little bit impatient with the whole thing? Boy, I've had enough of this. I'm ready to, you know, to cash it all in. Somebody else wants it, they can have it. What about chapter 12? Aaron and Miriam actually face Moses. Say, Moses, we're having our doubts about your qualification to be the leader here, especially since you took to wife this Ethiopian woman. Moses had taken an Ethiopian woman for wife. Moses had to think, what is this? Aaron, who's been with me from the start on this whole thing, Miriam, my own sister, and now they are questioning my role, which I never asked for, which the Lord assigned me, and which the Lord has thoroughly explained to all of us, and now they are wanting to push me aside. I don't know, another reason maybe to become a little bit impatient. I'm going right up through some of these chapters. Chapter 13. This is something we never forget. Moses gets to the point where, at the Lord's instruction, Moses identifies 12 men, one man from each of the tribes, and assigns them to go into the land of Canaan to spy it out, you know, check the place out. This is where we're headed. This is the land that the Lord has promised for us. Let's get in there and take a look and see what it is going to take and how we're going to take care of this as we move into Canaan. Sent these 12 spies into the land. They went. They spied. They looked around. They got all the information. And then they returned. And you remember, don't you, as well as I do, the kind of report they brought back? They said, boy, this is a wonderful land. It is lush. There are great meadows for pasturing our flocks. There are wonderful streams. There are wells of water. There are fruit trees. There are vines. It's a wonderful place. It is a land, truly, that flows with milk and honey. You know, that's the words that we see. Land that flows with milk and honey. Nevertheless, however, they said, the people who live there are very strong. We wouldn't stand a chance. These people are well established. They live in fortified cities with walls. We couldn't hope to go up against these folks. Large populations, and some of them are giants in the land. We would be foolish to head in there. And there are established nations. There's the Amalekites, the Jebusites, the Hittites, the Amorites, Canaanites all over the place. We can't possibly go into that land. In fact, what we should do is turn around and head back to Egypt. That would be the best thing. Talk about frustration. Talk about grounds for impatience. Even the Lord, you know, a little bit later, the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? I'm going to wipe them out with the pestilence. Get rid of them. I don't need these people. They need us. We don't need them. And of course, Moses stood up for the people again. But you know, these are the people then who basically said, you know what, Moses? We are going to elect a new leader. We're going to turn around and go back to Egypt. Talk about a time to become impatient with some folks. Chapter 16, a whole bunch of things happen here. You might recall in chapter 16, there was an absolute rebellion led by four particular individuals where they came to Moses and Aaron and said, you guys think you are the holy ones. Why are you so holy? Why should you be over the rest of us? Now, they seemed to forget the fact that it was the Lord who decided who was going to lead this group, wasn't it? It wasn't Moses or even Aaron who appointed themselves. And the people say, why should you be exalted over us? Why should you be over us? Why can't we take charge of this whole thing? And these four leaders enlisted 250 of the leadership of the 12 tribes, and they formed an actual revolt, and they were going to take the thing over. And you know how this eventually ended up. Of course, Moses and Aaron went before the Lord. The Lord told them what to do. And eventually, Moses had the leadership go out and stand in front of their tents with their families. And the text says, and you can read it there in Numbers 16, verse 31. And it'll say, the ground split apart under them, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their household and all their goods. With these four men and our whole families and everything they had, boom, swallowed up in the earth, and the earth closed. Excuse me. The earth closed up around them. Probably made more noise than that. I'm not sure, but at least we weren't there to hear it. But what a terrifying, incredible event that was. And then what about the 250 co-conspirators who were leading the Israelite nation astray? Fire came down out of heaven and consumed them all, it says. That's what the Bible says. Fire came down from the Lord and consumed the 250 rebellious conspirators there. Would Moses by this time maybe have had reason to say, I've had enough with these people. You know, I've had just about all I can stand. I've been with this long enough. I'm getting a little bit impatient here. The very next day, a huge group came to Moses and said, Moses, you killed the people of the Lord. You're responsible for this. Who opened up the earth? Who sent down the fire? Was it Moses? But they blamed Moses. And the Lord said, we've had enough of this, Moses. We're going to send a pestilence and take care of this once and for all. But Moses again pled with the Lord, and the Lord said, okay, here's what you do. Send Aaron through there to cut a line, and the people on this side are the ones who are going to be eliminated. The others will be saved. They did that, and the Lord sent, it says, a pestilence. In some translations, it's called la peste, the plague. And it says 14,700 people perished. 14,700 people perished in the pestilence. By this time, do you think Moses had maybe had enough of this kind of stuff? This is all in the past. This is in history. This is before we got to Kadesh. So what happened at Kadesh? On top of all that background, when they got to Kadesh, Moses' sister Miriam passed away. All this on Moses' shoulders, in addition to the sorrow of his sister's loss pressing on his heart. What a burden. What pressure. What a moment when a person could be certainly justified in becoming impatient. Well, you know what went on here. Back to the story there in Kadesh. God told Moses to stand before the congregation, speak to the rock before the congregation's eyes, and the rock will yield its water. And thus you'll bring water for them out of the rock, give them drink to the congregation and to the animals. And he did it. So Moses took the rod, just as the Lord had told him to do, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together, it says in the book of Numbers. Gathered the assembly together where everybody can see what's happening. They're all ready, all standing there to witness. And then Moses said, listen now, you rebels. Probably, I might have used stronger language than that. I don't know. Must we bring water for you out of this rock? And then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod. Must we bring water for you out of this rock? And you know how that story ended up. Water came out, of course, and gave water to the people and all their animals. But the Lord said to Moses, because you did not believe me, Moses, to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I had given them. Because you did not believe me when you had the opportunity here with hundreds of thousands of people standing there to witness, ready to see demonstrated before them my power, my goodness, my love for them, my authority over everything in the universe, and to demonstrate that. Instead of doing that, you said, in a moment of impatience, in just a moment of impatience where you failed to represent me, you struck the rock and said, must we bring the water out of this rock for you? Moses, you remember who brought the water out of that rock? It wasn't you. And you know that. And you know that you failed at that moment. What a terrible, terrible moment. Terrible moment in Moses' life. A moment of temporary impatience, loss of focus, loss of confidence in the Lord of the universe. Just took his eyes off for a moment. And it meant a loss for Moses of the greatest sort. He would not be able to enter the promised land. You know, the terrible nature of this thing comes really into focus when we see the account in the last chapter of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 34, the last chapter of Deuteronomy, where it tells us about Moses' last moments. This is where the Lord told Moses to go up and ascend the mountain. Deuteronomy 34. Starting at the first verse, Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo. This has got to be touching for anybody who reads this. I'll tell you, when I read this, it almost brings me to tears, because you're looking at the final moments of a man who has dedicated the last 40 years of his life to following exactly where the Lord has instructed him to go. He didn't want to do any of this. And here he is in the last moments of his life. Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, which is across from Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead, as far, you know, Gilead, and as far up, all the way up to Dan, and then over into the land of Ephraim and Manasseh and Naphtali, and down into the big spread of the land of Judah, stretching all the way over to the Mediterranean Sea. He could look away over there. And down in the south end, he saw all that, and the plain of the valley of Jericho. He saw the whole thing. And the Lord let Moses look at the whole thing. And then the Lord said to Moses, Moses, this land that you're seeing is the land of which I swore to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. This is the land, Moses. This is it. And Moses, I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there. Talk about disappointment. Is there any greater disappointment that you could imagine in Moses' heart at that moment, at that time? Well, dear people, you know where it came from. You've heard the story, and I've heard the story, and we've heard it said, probably, all of us probably have heard, that Moses struck the rock instead of speaking to the rock. It wasn't striking instead of speaking. Here's what the Lord said. The Lord said, Moses, because, wasn't because you struck rather than spoke. That's not what it was. It was, Moses, because you had a chance to show the people my glory, my power, my authority, my goodness, my character, right there in front of the people. You had a chance to do that. And in a moment of impatience, you failed to do that. You took your eyes away and you failed. Oh, that's terrible. Throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, the importance of patience has been repeated several times for us. There's one little bitty concise statement that I just love, and it's in Psalms, and the psalmist says, rest in the Lord, wait patiently for him. The Lord is the one who's in control. The Lord has a plan. He will achieve that plan in his way, in his time. And when we look around us and see what appear to be impossible conditions, if we would be patient and rest in the Lord, we could look to the conclusion that he will undoubtedly provide. There's a lot of these things. The psalmist also said, I waited patiently, patiently for the Lord, and he inclined to me and heard my cry. The wise man in Ecclesiastes, the patient in spirit, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. We don't hear that very often. Nowadays, really, we look to pride, don't we? In the New Testament, several places, but there are a few that catch my attention. Paul in the book to the Romans, the letter to the Romans, mentions this eternal life to those who by patient continuance in doing good seek for glory, honor, and immortality. By patient continuance, knowing the ultimate. Again in Romans, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation. Now in Paul's time, he's talking to people who undoubtedly experienced some real tribulation. Moses experienced some real tribulation. We think we're experiencing tribulation. Compare our tribulation to what Moses saw. In any case, Paul says, patient in tribulation. In the book of Hebrews, of course, referring back to the patriarch Abraham. And so, after he, Abraham, had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. Patience all over. The Apostle James, that wonderful Apostle James, everything he says just seems to be aimed at me. I'm not sure how he knew, but you know, James, in this abundance of counsel for people endeavoring to lead a good Christian life, plenty of counsel for living a good Christian life and facing the trials that come along, he says, therefore, be patient, brethren, until when? Until the coming of the Lord. He knew it was me, see? Be patient until the coming of the Lord. And the example, he says, see how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and nighter rain. The farmer knows you can't hurry the seasons. The season's going to happen when the season happens. Be patient. Also, James, again, I don't know if he's speaking just to me or to all of us here in these days. Apparently he was speaking directly to the people of his time. But when he says, you also be patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Be patient. The Lord has his way. The Lord has his time. The Lord will bring it to pass. Impatience. I've dealt with it. Maybe some of you have dealt with the same thing. For Moses, what an enormous cost. Just a momentary lapse. 40 years enduring all the problems and assaults and insults that he carried through the wilderness. He lost everything, it seemed, at least on this earth. A momentary lapse with Moses, a failure to trust at that moment with any of us, could represent really a gap in the confidence that we should have for the one who is truly in control. If we have real patience, that should indicate that we are confident in the one who has control, will complete the task in his time, in his way. Why are we impatient? Rest in the Lord, people. Wait patiently for him. He is in control.